It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome in the latest episode of that SEC podcast brought to you by Twisted Tea and My Bookie. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And no Cousin Shane on this episode. He's studying up for his next weekend update. I hope y'all enjoyed that. If you saw it on the YouTube channel, go check it out. Something new we're trying, and the reviews have been outstanding. Probably the highest, most positive reviewed thing we've ever done on YouTube. So we're just trying to come up with fun ways to bring you guys some new content this football season. So another reason, if you ain't already, jump on the YouTube page and check out Cousin Shane. He's got a new little gimmick he's trying, and it was funny as hell just putting that together. But check that out. Also, new appearance on the Paul Feinbaum show, so go check that out. But enough plugging our stuff. You're here for the content, and it is a Stephen Lassen Tuesday, the highlight of my week, getting to talk to Stephen here. So we'll get to him in just a minute. But before we get to that, a couple of news and notes around the SEC. Nick Saban has already gotten it out of the way. Jalen Milroe is going to be the starting quarterback for this crucial SEC opener with Ole Miss coming to town. And that was only after Lane Kiffin kind of kicked a hornet's nest here on Sunday. What was it, Sunday night? He allegedly said that Kevin Steele is no longer the defensive coordinator at Alabama. It's Travarius Robinson, which has got a lot of South Carolina fans laughing that they're not big on T-Rob. But be that as it may, here's Lane Kiffin denying, you know, that he was really trying to make much of this. And here's Nick Saban kind of, sort of saying it's untrue, but not really. He didn't outright. He just said, hey, Steele's. Well, you'll hear it. So let's get to the other side.
Lane, what did you see on film that led you to make the comment last night about Coach Robinson coaching their defense?
I was asked the question, what was like going against Steele's defense? So I wasn't really trying to start this big thing. We saw things on TV copy just where it was different, you know, of first off of what the play looked like, the calls and stuff. And then so we looked into that further. And then, I mean, ain't no secret. We kind of, people in these buildings know each other. So obviously got some information that way too. So, you know, it just is what it is, kind of like the quarterbacks. You know, you got to prepare for a different quarterback, prepare for a different play caller. So we got a game film of that. I'm not sure whatever transpired after Texas, but we're going to have our hands full no matter what.
You know, from a quarterback standpoint, this is all I'm going to say about this. You know, Jalen really showed the leadership that I was looking for, you know, during the game in terms of supporting his teammates and doing the things he needed to do. He's had the opportunity to play, so has the other guys. Jalen played the best of all those guys, and so I think he's earned the opportunity to be the quarterback. On this other thing that I hear floating around out there, I'm sure you've seen the same reports that I've seen, is Kevin Steele is the defensive coordinator. He has all the defensive coordinator responsibilities. The only thing that we tried to improve on from an administrative standpoint was game day administration of getting the signals in quicker. All right, so that's the only thing that, you know, we worked on together as a staff. The whole staff made a contribution to it, and I think it was a lot better in this game than it was in the Texas game.
All right, so kind of sort of a denial there by Saban, but not really. He just said, you know, Steele's got that title still, but he didn't outright say Steele's calling the plays. And so that is just adding a little intrigue to this matchup. I think really it's interesting. If this is true, I don't know why Kiffin would put this out there. I think that's something you'd keep in your back pocket. But worst case scenario, he knew that was going to be something that Nick Saban and company were going to have to be dealing with all week long was the headache of this getting out there. If it is true, even if it's not, something they have to deal with. So Lane Kiffin playing chess, not checkers. Maybe it'll finally help him win a big game here in Oxford. Oh, one other thing, Alabama. The players-only meeting. It's players-only season. It didn't work for Tennessee. Let's see if it works for Alabama. But if Alabama comes out and plays as uninspired as Tennessee did against Florida, we may have to be done with these player-only meetings. Speaking of Tennessee and Florida, couple suspensions. The SEC announced here on Monday, 3 Florida Gators and only 1 Vol. But it's for, some non-conference cupcakes here. For the following game, 3 Florida players, offensive lineman Damian George, offensive lineman Micah Mazuka, and tight end Dante Zanders, as well as Tennessee defensive lineman Omar Norman Lott, all suspended for the upcoming week. Tennessee's playing UTSA, Florida's playing Charlotte. Let me double check at if they're, I don't think they're out for the entire game, any of those guys. Just the first half, all of them. Omar Lott, Tennessee out for the first half, and all those Gators out for the first half against Charlotte. So not even a full game suspension, but that was from that damn brouhaha at the end of the game. Something to, I got to be honest with you, I didn't even see it because there's so many games going on. That game was decided. I muted that channel and moved on to another one. But last thing, before we get to Stephen Lassen Tuesday, great conversation with Stephen. But the SEC announced, and sorry, I confused someone last week, the kickoff times, not for this weekend, but the following weekend, September 30th. Right now it's September 19th as you're hearing this, but for week 5, kickoff times, television coverage has been announced by the SEC, starting with Florida at Kentucky, noon Eastern, 11 Central on ESPN or SEC Network. The network will be decided this upcoming Saturday. Same deal with Texas A&M, Arkansas. It'll be on ESPN or SEC Network. That'll be decided on Saturday. But either way, the kickoff time is official. Noon Eastern, 11 Central down there in Jerry World for Texas A&M and Arkansas. Please, God, let this be the last one in Jerry World. It's not doing anyone any favors anymore. The rest of these are official. CBS on SEC. He's got another Georgia game. Georgia at Auburn. 3:30 Eastern, 2:30 Central. Big matchup there. Kirby Smart, Hugh Freeze, their first go at it since Freeze got fired at Ole Miss. I think it was Kirby's first year. Ole Miss actually whooped Georgia that year, if I recall. So this is their first meeting as Georgia and Auburn coach. Missouri at Vanderbilt, 4 Eastern, 3 Central on the SEC Network. Man, I'm just loving all these. It's all conference games here. And again, this is September 30th. LSU at Ole Miss, big matchup, 6 Eastern, 5 Central on ESPN. Ooh, boy. Depending on what happens this weekend, that's going to be huge. South Carolina at Tennessee, 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central on the SEC Network. Cousin Shane, he's already asked off. He wants to be at this game. Much anticipated in Vol Nation. And last but not least, Alabama at Mississippi State, 9 Eastern, 8 Central on ESPN. Back-to-back ESPN nationally televised conference games. Love to see that. Cannot wait. But we got some great matchups this upcoming weekend to break down. Ton of conference games. Let's kick it over to our interview with Stephen Lassen. All right, it's a Stephen Lassen Tuesday. So you know what that means. Stephen Lassen, senior editor, Athlon Sports, back on the show. Stephen, what's up, brother?
Hey man, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me. It was a supposed to be a dud week in college football, but as always, it never disappoints, and I am fired up for this slate of games coming up this Saturday. It is going to be a wonderful and glorious week of college football, that is for sure.
Well, you can't say dud without me thinking of Alabama, so let's just start right there, Stephen. What the hell are we doing here in Tuscaloosa? They just announced Jalen Milroe. Now he's a starting quarterback again. After not seeing the field against South Florida when they really needed them, man, it's people. I can't believe I got this so right, Stephen, because I get so much so wrong. But the one thing I have nailed, it looks like the dynasty is I don't, we can't even call it a dynasty anymore at this point, but the wheels are essentially a loss away from the wheels coming off, I feel like.
Man, that performance on Saturday was one of the more like shocking, puzzling performances that I've seen at Alabama in some time. Like, I don't remember a regular season game. I mean, Alabama lost to Clemson in the national championship, and it was pretty one-sided. You know, there's been some of those moments, of course, over the last, like, you know, 5 years or so. But to have a non-conference game where you're favored by, like, 20-something points or 30, wherever the line ended up, and an opponent in South Florida that was ranked in the 100s in most, like, 133 rankings with a roster that, frankly, wasn't very good last year, was really shocking. This is going to be a really interesting week for Alabama just to kind of see where they are. I mean, this is a critical point of the season with the SEC opener coming up. It could kind of go one of two ways. You know, you've got Ole Miss coming in. It could be kind of a chance to reset the season. If they lose this game, all of a sudden, even more questions start to pop up. So Saturday's performance just raised a lot of alarm bells for me on multiple levels. Like, where does this team sort of hang its hat? Like, what is Alabama good at right now? The offensive line hasn't lived up to the hype, so they can't run the ball as effectively as they thought. Quarterback situation is, you know, now this is going to be Jalen Milroe back in the starting lineup after Buckner and Simpson sort of underwhelmed on Saturday. Defense, I thought, you know, got after South Florida pretty well. But, you know, can they replicate that when they play Ole Miss and Texas A&M? Like, that's going to be the question going forward. So more questions out of Alabama than I think we've seen in some time. And just frankly, just a really puzzling, head scratching kind of performance. I mean, we haven't seen this out of Alabama in really some time.
Right. Well, we'll get all into that Ole Miss matchup. But before we look ahead, Stephen, I'd like to look back here. We did something with Cousin Shane on the last episode that I enjoyed. So I want to do the same thing with you and focus specifically on the conference matchups, because you don't really get a good evaluation of these teams oftentimes when they're playing McNeese or Austin Peay or who knows what directional school. But where we do get a good sense is in these league matchup games. So let's start with the game that we hyped up last week, Florida-Tennessee. Florida just dominated on the line of scrimmage in a big win for Billy. I would argue the biggest win of the Billy Napier era to date. Did you learn more about Florida in this matchup, or did you take away more from Tennessee and their struggles? Where would you lean on that?
I would go Florida. I think you can make a case like you learned a lot about both teams here. But for me, I wanted to see Florida week one to week three. Like, how would they respond? How would they rebound after such a poor performance against Utah? And I think the verdict was they rebounded pretty well. I think it was such a huge, like, proof of concept win for Billy Napier in the grand scheme of things. It's the best win that he's had at Florida. Like, the Utah win last year was big. This is an SEC game where their backs were kind of against the wall. I mean, you've got, you know, you get kind of like, where is this program? What's the direction? Well, this kind of win sort of validates the process that Napier is trying to go through. It only validates it if they finish the year by winning out, of course. Like, if they lose out, then all of a sudden all that momentum goes away. But the things that you wanted to see from a style standpoint, like defense under Austin Armstrong, seems to be improved. Offensively, the style that Florida wants to play, run the ball, efficient passing game out of Graham Mertz. Mertz was solid on Saturday night. So all the things that you wanted to see cleaned up from week one to week three, and sort of that proof of concept validation win, that was there on Saturday night for Florida. So that's why I learned more about Florida in that win.
All right. So same question then. Georgia beats South Carolina. South Carolina kind of dominated the first half, but Georgia completely dominated the second half to get a 10-point win at home over a red hot Spencer Rattler led South Carolina. Did you learn more about Georgia or more about South Carolina?
I'm going to go the opposite way this time. And I'll say this, like, I'm not worried about Georgia at all. Like, I sort of think Georgia's just sort of building at this point of the season. Like, they're setting the foundation. The pieces are starting to come into place. And, like, we see some early struggles, but by November, it's going to be worked out. But I think what I learned about South Carolina was the same thing that I would say about Florida. Like, the week one to week three improvement. Under Shane Beamer, this team has improved every year from the start of the season to the end of the year. And so from week one to week three, I think you have to like where this program is going. You know, throwing out true freshmen on the offensive line right into the fire, playing the nation's best defense. And you get a great game and a great game plan in, early on from Spencer Rattler. So I think that South Carolina team, if that one shows up that we saw on Saturday, shows up the rest of the way, you know, you start looking at their schedule, like Mississippi State, Tennessee, Florida, Missouri, like there's a lot of toss-ups on this schedule. And even down the stretch, the last four games at home, including Kentucky and Clemson. So what I learned is I think South Carolina is going in the right direction. And if they get this version of Spencer Rattler that showed up on Saturday, a lot of these toss-up games become very winnable for South Carolina.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that, because I think it's further validation that Spencer Rattler is playing better at the quarterback position than any SEC quarterback. I know Jackson Dart's, you know, red hot. Jaden Daniels, SEC player of the week. Maybe some others you could pick from. But just after three games, would you put Rattler as maybe the most proven quarterback in the SEC?
I think so. I think it's really close. Like Jackson Dart's been really, you know, I think off the radar nationally, but that game against Tulane with the way that Ole Miss was not able to run the ball and it was sort of on his shoulders after, and just the whole offseason like intrigue for me with Ole Miss and the quarterback battle, like he's really taken a step forward. But, you know, you look at what Spencer Rattler has done so far this year, and I think the case for him would be he didn't have a chance against North Carolina. Like the North Carolina defense was just after him from the opening snap. He hung in there. He had a solid performance that night. He goes on the road, maybe against the nation's best defense, and gives them a chance to have a 14-3 lead at halftime, have a chance to win the game. And oh, by the way, his best receiver got hurt early on in the game. So I think to me, like we wanted to see Spencer Rattler kind of pick up where he left off from last year. I don't know that he's necessarily putting up like the red hot, like six touchdown performances, but he looks like an improved quarterback for me. So I think if you wanted to make the case for him at number one, I wouldn't disagree with you at all. I think based upon schedule and how he's played so far.
All right. So the final SEC matchup from last weekend, LSU, big win on the road at Mississippi State. Did you learn more about LSU or did you learn more about Mississippi State coming out of this one?
You might sense a theme here. LSU, I learned more about because, you know, week one to week three. If you watched college football on Saturday outside the SEC, Florida State struggled with Boston College, but they play Clemson this week. So there might have been a look ahead factor there. I think Florida State's really good. Like, I think Florida State, regardless of what happens this week against Clemson, they're probably going to end up being a top 10 team at the end of the year. So LSU had a pretty poor second half against the nation's top 10 team. I wanted to see how they responded. I think they checked off all the boxes. Jaden Daniels was great. Malik Nabers was great. I guess the shoulder wasn't too big of a problem considering the way he played after that injury. But, you know, we saw the way that the defense played too, just, you know, with the front just getting after Mississippi State's offensive line. Will Rogers had no time to throw it all. Like everything I wanted to see from LSU, they checked off those boxes. So I think dominance on the road in SEC play counts a lot for me in this scenario. So I learned a lot about LSU rebounding and continuing the theme of this team getting better under Brian Kelly as the season progresses for the second year in a row.
Now, one game we really wanted to hit on, Stephen, and not a conference game. It used to be, but and in some ways it kind of felt like a little bit like one, just I guess with the history and everything. But Missouri getting the biggest win of the Eli Drinkwitz era over Kansas State. Wild game, back and forth. Took a 61-yard field goal, SEC record by Harrison Meavis to win a game. We owe Brady Cook an apology, I think, Stephen, because yeah, I know, you know, you were not that harsh on him, but I've questioned whether he's the man for the job, but he had one hell of a performance, and they don't win that game without Brady Cook.
Absolutely. So I'm glad you asked me about this, because I do think we owe Brady Cook and Missouri maybe a little bit of an apology. And if it's not an apology, it's the tip of the cap. Because that game, first of all, I think Missouri, the crowd, the home environment was awesome for a non-conference game against a regional rival. The atmosphere was awesome. So I think credit to Missouri's fans for showing up on Saturday and making a difference. But also, I think in a clutch game like that, where you needed like one or two plays was going to decide it. Like Brady Cook and the big passes to Luther Burden. There were some other big plays in the passing game. He ran for a touchdown. Like he outplayed Will Howard, who I think coming into the game, probably most people would have said was the better quarterback. He outplayed him. So I think credit to Brady Cook for kind of being doubted, showing up on Saturday and delivering a clutch win for Missouri. And then in the big scheme, I think for Missouri, the thing here is we've talked like, can they get over the hump? That's the kind of win that can put them there, because their schedule sets up now to where you could realistically be 5-0 going into the LSU game. And with the East being as toss-up-y, if that's a word, as maybe we think it is, if Brady Cook continues to play like he did on Saturday and take a step forward, like if you're Missouri, like all of a sudden, Cousin Shane might be looking right on that that prediction this preseason.
And we have to mention too, Luther Burden. I mean, credit to him for living up to the potential. And he could have made the easy decision, Stephen. He could have went to Georgia. He could have went to, I think Ohio State was the other one that was involved. I mean, it's the two big ones, that virtually all these receivers and five stars go to. Stayed home, year two. And again, I realized, they weren't playing Georgia or anything, but they were playing a ranked number 15 Kansas State. And I don't know about you, Stephen, but anytime Luther Burden touched the ball, he looked like worlds better than anybody on the field. I think he's certainly coming on to his own, and he's well on his way to being an All-American.
Absolutely. I think you said it best there. Like, there are players that when you see them catch the ball or they're handed to them on like a handoff, like you stop, like you're watching it. Like I've got like on Saturday, I've got a couple TVs, and like anytime I seen the ball going to Luther Burden, I had to stop what I was doing and watch. Like he's that kind of player that he's just on a different level than everybody else. Like he's one of those guys who can take a 3-yard run and turn it into a 60-yard touchdown because he's either able to shake away a defender, to be elusive, to get downfield, pass the defensive back and catch a long touchdown. So for me, he's one of the most, I think, exciting players in the country. And if you were looking for that year one to year two jump by a receiver, he's clearly on that path to be an all-SEC and all-American this year.
Well, Stephen, I've enjoyed our conversations talking, the West stock and now even the East, I think, like you said, is up for grabby a little bit, if Georgia kind of disappoints. So let's focus on the West for a second here. But last week, I don't want to call you out, but you said, hey, Alabama's still the team to beat. And hell, they have not even lost a conference game, so maybe you're sticking with that. But where are we at now after seeing them struggle against South Florida, seeing LSU dominate, seeing Texas A&M? Again, they don't have a conference loss. They don't have a conference win either, but Texas A&M offense looks legit. And Ole Miss, we got to throw Ole Miss in there as well. Where do you currently see the SEC West race kind of racking up in terms of the contenders?
I think the beauty of this conversation is, like you said, like we're just getting started in SEC play. And the beauty of this is we could have this conversation every week. And thankfully, I can change my opinion because that's what I'm doing right now. I am going to change and go with LSU. Now, maybe I'm being prisoner of the moment and overreacting to LSU's win over Mississippi State or Alabama's poor showing against South Florida. But I think if that LSU team shows up, granted, Mississippi State secondary we know is a concern, if Jaden Daniels and that offense show up every week with a defensive front that's getting after teams like they are to sort of protect that secondary, I think this team is going to be hard to beat. You look at their schedule, they do have to go to Ole Miss. They get A&M at home. They have to go to Alabama. Alabama, to me, looks more vulnerable than they ever have been in the last couple years. So I think just having a difference maker, a quarterback, I know this defensive front is going to be pretty dominant week in and week out. I like LSU at the top right now.
Mm-hmm. Who's a next kind of next tier of contenders, at least right now?
I grouped the next three teams in a kind of a tier. I think the winner of Alabama Ole Miss is second right now. If you asked me to predict, I would probably lean Alabama slightly on Saturday. But of course, it's early in the week and a lot could change between now and an official prediction time. So I think pencil that team in second. And then I think after that, I've got Texas A&M. Like, I don't have many questions about Texas A&M from an offensive, like, firepower standpoint. I think once they get Evan Stewart back and they get the receivers that are banged up, Connor Wigman, I think a lot of trust in him, the way that he's developed so far this season, they're going to score points. My question with this team is going to be, is the defense that showed up against Miami the same defense that we're going to see in SEC play? And also, I think you're going to need a little bit of balance, too, on offense. I want to see that offensive line and running game continue to improve, or kind of see where it is within the SEC. So I think A&M is within striking distance. But to me, that Ole Miss and Alabama loom large for figuring out who might be the biggest contender to LSU.
Well, Stephen, I can hear the War Eagle fans screaming into their podcast machine right now because you didn't even mention Auburn. And I'll just save everybody the narrative, Stephen. If Auburn goes into Texas A&M, and I realize they're an underdog, but if they beat A&M, the story is going to be Jimbo can't get it done, fire Jimbo. We'll just completely overlook Auburn, even though they'd be 4-0. What would it take for Auburn to enter that conversation for Stephen Lassen?
First of all, I think you hit on something that's key, like the storyline of coaching for Saturday. Mm-hmm. If Auburn goes on the road and wins in College Station, and this is a series, it seems like the road team like typically does pretty well in, you know, how alarming is that going to be for A&M? Because you're going to be talking about like, hey, Hugh Freeze just came in here. He brought in a transfer quarterback. He's reloaded at receiver and on defense, and they're already higher than us in the top 25. Like, that would be alarming to me if I was Texas A&M. I've got Auburn in the kind of their own tier right now, because I kind of want to, like, they have, you know, three wins. The best team that they played was Cal. And it was one of the uglier games that we've seen this year. So I don't know how much we read into UMass and Samford, but I think if you're just looking at direction, like, to me, Auburn's clearly going in the right direction. But this Saturday, I think, will tell us a lot more about just where this team is.
Now, how about the SEC East, Stephen? I assume everybody's still got Georgia as a team to beat, and deservedly so, especially after Tennessee looks so awful in the swamp last weekend. But if Georgia continues to, you know, maybe not quite play up to their standard, and they got a lot of guys banged up, you know, what if Carson Beck is a fraud? He's not, but let's just say in these big time games, who is a team that you got your eye, or teams that you got your eye on, that is most likely to shock the world and steal it from the Georgia Bulldogs out of the East?
Would I be crazy to still be on the Tennessee bandwagon here?
I thought you were going to say Florida, which I wouldn't blame you for at this point in time. But no, I mean, that's the crazy thing, Stephen. They still host Georgia, you know, whatever that's worth, I don't know. But I mean, they probably have to win out. And they got some incredibly tough games, Tennessee does. But no, I mean, I think logically, I think that's the team. Unless Kentucky turns it on, unless Mizzou picks up a ton of momentum. That's not crazy. I'm about ready to sell all my stock in Tennessee, but the fact that you're still high on them gives me hope.
As I always remind myself, some performances are never as bad, and they're never as good as they look. And a lot can change week to week. Like, it's amazing in college football how different some of these teams are from week to week. I mean, look, Florida State's a great example. I mean, they look like the number one team in the country by beating LSU, and then they look like they're the number like 20 team, and they just, you know, struggle to beat Boston College. So, I mean, who the heck knows? I think, to answer your question, I think the intrigue for me is like 2 through 6 in the SEC East feels very wide open right now. And I don't think there's going to be a ton of separation in the final standings. Like, I think you're going to get a lot of like 5-3, 4-4 here. Like, I think it's going to be pretty tight overall. I think the optimism for me with Tennessee is, like, Joe Milton, I don't think is the problem for Tennessee. I think it's the offensive line. I think, you know, you start looking at some of the other teams, like, we don't really know what to make of Kentucky yet. There's some reason to be optimistic. Missouri got the big win on Saturday. Florida's got to kind of prove it again after the win over Tennessee. So, you know, there's just so many unknowns for this team that maybe I'm just defaulting to, I thought Tennessee was the better team coming into this year. I think Heupel will get this offense on track, like some of the things we've seen defensively at times this year, except for Saturday night on Tennessee. So maybe I'm just regressing to my preseason prediction here, but I'll go with the Volunteers still second until proven otherwise.
Oh, I know Cousin Shane certainly appreciates that vote of confidence. So, all right, let's look ahead, Stephen, to the games upcoming this weekend. And in my mind, the game of the week is Ole Miss at Alabama, even though Alabama struggled. And I like to poke the bear there, so to speak. But it's SEC on CBS. This is a game that's going to teach us a lot about Ole Miss. Lane Kiffin seemingly can't win the big one. Now, that's oftentimes a narrative for a coach who just hasn't had that opportunity yet. So, you know, he's got a lot on the line here, as does Alabama. Because, again, if they lose this game, I think the wheels fall off, because they're going to face about three or four tougher games, I think, than Ole Miss at home this early in the season. But they cast off Pete Golding, get his ass out of here. Well, he's back. You know, you can't lose to this guy. And, again, I've made this point, aside from Junkins, I don't think there's a player on Ole Miss roster that Alabama would take over one of their own. Even, you know, I'm sure they had opportunity to recruit Jackson Dart, and they decided not to. So, thoughts on this one, Stephen? Ole Miss at Alabama, and just all the intrigue going into this matchup.
Oh, man, there is a ton of intrigue here for me. I think the, you know, think about this matchup, and in 3 years, like, how our mindset has changed here. Like, you just assume, like, Alabama at home playing Ole Miss, probably, what, you know, 2-3 touchdown favorite. And we're sitting here going, it's only a touchdown now. Like, Ole Miss has looked better this year at times than Alabama has. Now, I know the schedule, you know, Alabama had Texas, but there's way more intrigue and doubt for me about who wins on Saturday in a game like this than we've seen because of Alabama's struggles this year. Also, there's the whole, like, Lane Kiffin, Pete Golding storyline. Like, Lane Kiffin wants them all. I know he really wanted that A&M game last year. I bet he really, really, really wants this one on Saturday. And, of course, like you mentioned, Pete Golding. I think the question for me in this matchup is going to be, like, if you're Alabama, like, can you lean on something here? Like, can you challenge Ole Miss in the trenches? Like, you got to get the running game going. Milroe is going to be in a quarterback. I suspect that we'll see a lot more quarterback runs this week from him. You know, and on the Ole Miss sideline, to me, the narrative is going to be Alabama is going to be able to probably contain the running game because of the way they've stopped the run this year and the way that they were getting after South Florida last week. So it's going to be on Jackson Dart. And I think he's proven this year he is capable of making the throws to win the game. So for me, I want to see Jackson Dart in a high-pressure environment, potentially getting back some guys who've been out to at receiver and tight end, which I think is important. And in this environment, Jackson Dart stepping up, or does Alabama sort of hold serve and remind us that, hey, yeah, we're not there yet, but we still got a lot of talent in the program. I think there's a lot of interesting storylines going into this game.
Do you have any thoughts at all, Stephen, on, I'm sure you saw this, but Kiffin basically said, well, you know, we found out Kevin Steele ain't even a defensive play caller anymore, and he's putting it on T-Rob and all this, and, you know, it's interesting, because I don't even know why you'd let that out if that was true, although I don't know, you know, if that's a huge advantage, but, because it is what it is.
I've got some theories.
Yeah, or is this Kiffin just saying, hey, I'm going to make Nick Saban have to deal with this headache all week long leading up to this matchup?
I think it's that. I think he's just, you know, I mean this in like a nice way. Like, Lane Kiffin likes to troll. Yep. And he's just trolling Nick Saban. I also think there could be something this too. Let me throw something against the wall. Let the media go chase it down. Let him ask Nick Saban about it. So in a way, you're sort of using the media to gain intel on something that you might be think is going, you might think is going on behind the scenes. So Lane Kiffin, very clever, trying to get some information out of Nick Saban. That's my theory.
Right. And obviously, something that shouldn't be overlooked, Stephen, Sarkisian and Kiffin are very close. So you have to imagine that Kiffin has just been burning Sark's phone up, just saying, you know, what'd you see? What'd you attack? And not, you know, that's not apples to apples because they different rosters and everything. But you have to imagine those conversations took place. And that could help Ole Miss as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I guess maybe we should look at this in the bigger context too. Like former assistants fared pretty well against Nick Saban recently. You know, you think Jimbo winning in College Station, almost winning last year, Kirby Smart in the national championship game, Sarkisian winning this year, Kiffin coming right on the doorstep of trying to knock off Alabama last year. So maybe this is Lane's time here. But I think your broader point, though, I think Sark, the game plan that Sark used to attack Alabama, I think is really what Kiffin and Ole Miss are going to have to do, because I don't think it's any secret. Like Alabama's front, despite some of the questions on the back end, they're going to make life very difficult for Quinshon Judkins. And with the concerns that Ole Miss has had along the offensive line so far, it is on Jackson Dart. So I think this game is really, I mean, not to simplify it too much, but you know, I think Milroe is going to have to play with a ton of like more like mistake-free style. He's going to have to make some plays with his legs. And I think Jackson Dart, you know, those making those downfield throws that we saw Quinn Ewers hit, some of those are going to have to hit on Saturday for Ole Miss to win this game.
Do you think that is on offensive coordinator Tommy Reese, or is that on Jalen Milroe to make adjustments? Because I would contend that I don't think they used Milroe in the best way, and I think a coach's job is to utilize his player's skill set to it just feels like they were trying to make him Tom Brady, and clearly he's not that caliber of court. He's just a different style of player, and he's got the deep ball, he's got the running. I think they need to utilize him in that way. And so I guess I just answered my own question. I think it's on Tommy Reese. Who do you put that blame on?
It's definitely Tommy Reese. I think you have to use Jalen Milroe differently than you did against Texas. Like, I think he's clearly, and I'm referring to Milroe, he's clearly improved if you watch him from 2022 to 2023. Just overall, from a passer standpoint, he looks way more comfortable out there. But you can't expect him to be a pocket passer. Like, he's just not that type of quarterback. Like, he's better moving around, whether it's design runs, getting to the edge, hitting the deep passes. Like, the midfield stuff isn't there yet. But to me, that's on Tommy Reese. Like, you've got to design some ways to use Milroe's legs on Saturday. And frankly, like, the whole point, the whole problem right now with Alabama is the offensive line. Like, they had the players-only meeting, supposedly. Maybe we'll see if that results in anything, any changes this Saturday. I know Booker was out against South Florida, but it all starts for me there. Like, Tommy Reese has to have a better game plan, and if you're Alabama, you've got to get the offensive line playing to its potential to win on Saturday, which is weird to say because Ole Miss being a seven-point underdog is some different territory for us based upon the last couple of years.
Right. Well, we got another West showdown, Stephen, that a lot of fans are going to be intrigued about. I know I will be. Auburn at Texas A&M. I believe it's an early kickoff here, SEC Nation. So, that adds a little something to it. But this is an opportunity for Texas A&M to bounce back after that loss a couple weeks ago, get the SEC rolling, the SEC part of their schedule rolling, whereas Auburn, you know, expectations are the fans are high, but I mean, outside of the fan base, expectations are Auburn will go down here and lose on the road in a tough environment. But I guess I say that to say I think Hugh Freeze has got everything to gain, nothing to lose in this situation, which makes Auburn very dangerous.
Agree with you. I think it's sort of the narrative for me in storyline is A&M. with the loss to Miami early in the season. It's the same thing as Florida. You've got a chance to reset your season. You haven't lost a game in SEC play. So if you win this one, all of a sudden, you know, things look a lot better, because then you get Arkansas, who's struggling right now. You get Alabama coming to your place, and then you go to Tennessee before the midpoint of the season. So I think if you're A&M, you got to forget about what happened in Miami and turn your focus back to the SEC West, because it is winnable. Because with the way that Alabama looks, and we talked about LSU, like, A&M is right there. So I think it's about refocusing for me for A&M. I think for Auburn, you are playing with house money. Like, they've been off the radar kind of to start the season. Mentioned the game against Cal earlier this year where it was just an ugly offensive game. But I mean, they could go down to College Station, win, and be 4-0, be ranked. And we're talking about how much progress this program has made under Hugh Freeze in his first year. I love the matchup of A&M's receivers against Auburn secondary. Like, Auburn secondary, 17th in the country in defensive pass success rate, one of the better groups coming into the year, lived up to the hype so far. And on the other side of the ball too, I think it's sort of weakness versus weakness in a sense. Like, we don't know, I think, what to make of Auburn's offense because of the level of competition. And A&M has that defensive performance against Miami that was just so sluggish, like being able to stop the pass. So I think we're going to learn a lot about both of these teams on Saturday, and it's sort of a chance for one of these two to sort of rewrite or write a new chapter in the way their season is going.
Well, something you hit on there, Stephen, you know, I always say the players in my mind matter a lot more than the coaches, and I believe that firmly. But what's your thoughts on DJ Durkin versus Phillip Montgomery? Because one more Miami-type performance, that may be Durkin's last appearance at A&M. I mean, he's got a lot to prove in this game, I think.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, just on the most like basic level here, A&M's got way too much talent to be having performances like they did at Miami. And Miami's got a lot of good players, you know, Tyler Van Dyke and the receiving core. They are much improved offensively than they were last season. But there was no reason for Texas A&M's defense to get embarrassed like it did a few weeks ago. And I think very broadly, if you come into this game and you're Texas A&M's defense and you're looking at Auburn going, they've got all these new pieces. We don't know how good their offensive line or their quarterback situation is. If they come in here and put up 38, 40 points in a victory, and if you're A&M, you start to get a little bit worried, especially if you're DJ Durkin. And you know, looking ahead, it only gets tougher. I mean, you got to play KJ Jefferson. We'll see about Alabama. You got to play Tennessee's high-powered offense. So no question about it. I think Phillip Montgomery and Hugh Freeze here, using Peyton Thorne, using Robbie Ashford, ought to see some opportunities. Now, if you're A&M, the counter would be, hey, our defensive line, the dudes take over here. Like, the dudes up front for Texas A&M just take over. And they probably push around Auburn's offensive line, which came into the season with some questions. And I think we still don't know how good this group is through three games.
Well, and you may have mentioned it. If you did, I apologize. I maybe just didn't hear it. But when we were talking best quarterbacks in the SEC, I'm not ready to put Connor Wigman there yet, but he looks like he's getting close. So they got that in their back pocket as well. And if this is, God forbid, a shootout, which it shouldn't be for Durkin's sake, but if it is, I've got a lot more confidence in A&M's quarterback and his weapons than Auburn and their weapons right now. Are you right there with me?
Agree with you. Yeah, if it's a high-scoring game, give me Connor Wigman. Give me Evan Stewart, Anaya Smith, and the weapons for Texas A&M. And I think it's, by all counts, it sounds like A&M is going to be at full strength at receiver for this one. So I think if you're DJ Durkin, you're not hoping for a high-scoring game. But if it does, you got a ton more confidence in your guy at quarterback and Connor Wigman than Auburn right now.
Let's take a little break from the show to let you know we're presented by MyBookie. Head on over to mybookie.ag today. And don't forget to use that promo code THATSEC. That's THATSEC over at MyBookie. And they're willing to give you an instant 50% initial deposit bonus up to $1,000 today. You sign up for a new account at mybookie.ag today. This is the number one way to help this podcast stay independent. Please, please help support the podcast. Take advantage of this offer. And you can just throw $50 in there, $100, whatever you got. Head on over to mybookie.ag today. Sign up, new account, using promo code THATSEC. There's a link in the show notes. Click that link, sign up, use that promo code THATSEC. We would really, really appreciate it. And just fade our picks, and you'll be looking pretty each and every Saturday. We're also brought to you by Game Time Sidekicks. We love our Game Time Sidekicks. Head on over to GameTimeSidekicks.com. Put in that promo code SEC for 20% off your entire order. This officially licensed NCAA stainless steel ware, you'll love it. Cups, sippy cups, tumblers, dog bowls. They got it all over at Game Time Sidekicks. Every college program represented. And of course, each and every member of the SEC. So head on over to Game Time Sidekicks, promo code SEC for 20% off your entire order. Are you ready to elevate your college football game day experience? Check out Twisted Tea, your go-to game beverage for college football fans. Twisted Tea is unlike any hard beverage you've had before. It's made with real brewed tea and packs a flavorful punch, 5% alcohol, and no carbonation, delivering the perfect balance of taste and refreshment that goes down smooth for every game day occasion. No need to settle for the usual. Twisted Tea turns up any occasion, especially when you're cheering on your favorite SEC team. Twisted Tea, the drink that fuels fun and celebrates your love of college football. Keep it twisted. Podcast is also brought to you by Game Time. Head on over to GameTime.co and use promo code THATSEC, THATSEC for $20 off your first purchase. Buying tickets to your favorite events shouldn't be stressful. Game Time is a fast and easy way to buy tickets for all sports, music, comedy, and theater near you. Game Time is the place for the last minute ticket sales. Forget planning months in advance. Game Time has deals on tickets right up to the day of the event. Head on over to GameTime.co. Snag tickets without the stress. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code THATSEC for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem THATSEC for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Now, another West showdown, Stephen, Arkansas at LSU, battle for the golden boot here. Love these rivalries. It's so weird. It should never play this game in September if there's a trophy involved here. But Arkansas coming off a very rough performance. I mean, they probably they should have won that game, but miscues, mistakes, 14 penalties, and then LSU red hot. I mean, this has got all the makings of a blowout, but I don't know, Steven. I think this is a man-up style game for Arkansas. I think we get the best Arkansas we've seen, and I think this is going to be a lot closer than the spread indicates. What's your early read on it?
It feels wrong that these two teams are playing in September, right? I mean, like, we're just used to seeing them play, like, around Thanksgiving with the season, kind of winding down. But it'll be – I think the timing of this game is a little unusual. But at the same time, like, I think it's like you said, Arkansas backs against the wall. You start looking at the schedule, LSU, A&M, Ole Miss, Alabama coming up. I mean, this is a brutal stretch of games for Arkansas. Saturday night was really just a ton of miscues. When you outgain a team 424 to 281, you should probably win that game if you're Arkansas. So there were just a ton of mistakes across the board. The offensive line continues to be an issue. If you want to kind of put the offensive line struggles into context, they had 6 runs against BYU that accounted for 128 yards. The other 33 attempts, 49 yards. So you like the big plays, but you want to see more consistency in your ground game. So I think that's kind of where it starts for me. If Arkansas is going to have a chance on Saturday night, got to be improved offensive line. You're gonna have to give KJ Jefferson time to throw. LSU is red hot. I still think that the fact that this is a rivalry game and the fact that Arkansas probably ought to be embarrassed about the way that game turned out. I think we're going to get a very focused Arkansas team on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, Sam Pittman, he needs this one, I think, badly to kind of, not that he's lost all sport or anything, but just kind of calm any of that. Man, it's just a tough spot to be in. Whereas LSU, I think, you know, we're throwing them up now as an SEC West contender. They've got to prove that, I don't want to say fluke, because there's no, you don't win on this in this league on the road like they did last week and call it a fluke. That's the wrong word, but consistency. That is something that was lacking last season. We need to see that this season if LSU is going to be a legitimate contender for the SEC. I think even the playoff, but we've got to see it in games like this. Otherwise, the doubters, they're going to have a lot of ammo if Arkansas wins, or even I think if Arkansas keeps this game close.
You know, I think Arkansas is going to be, I think, focused on Saturday night. And I think backs against the wall, I think a little bit of desperation. They're hungry. You know, they're probably going to come in, and especially with it being a rivalry game, they're probably going to give LSU their best shot. But also, I think what you said there is kind of what's intriguing to me about LSU here. They get Ole Miss and Missouri on the road after this game. So that consistency, if they take care of business on Saturday night, where they're over a 2-touchdown favorite, and they go on the road and handle Ole Miss and Missouri, all of a sudden, sort of the narrative on LSU changes a lot. Like, that Saturday's performance against Mississippi State was really impressive, but you got to have that week-to-week consistency in order to start climbing back up the ranking. So they're going to get Arkansas, like LSU is going to get Arkansas's best shot. If they come out and play like they did against Mississippi State and they take care of business, I think all of a sudden, like, sort of that national narrative is going to start to change. And we're going to be talking about, hey, LSU's creeping back closer to the top 10. And then we'll see what happens in Tuscaloosa. And that might tell us a lot about where the SEC West stands after this Saturday.
Yeah. And I mean, we still got a long way to go, but this could be the best showdown of, I know it's always kind of silly when we say like showdown of quarterbacks, because they're not playing against each other. They're playing against the defenses, obviously, but KJ and Jaden Daniels going head to head. I mean, that to me is must see television right there.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, you know, you posed the question earlier, like, who is the best quarterback in the SEC? And I'm going through the list of quarterbacks and I'm thinking, yeah, I would probably vote Spencer Rattler. But I could also make a case for Jackson Dart. Jaden Daniels has been good. Connor Wigman. But let's not forget about KJ Jefferson. Like, you know, he, despite all of Arkansas's problems this season, like, you know, maybe that you could critique a few things about how he's played here or there. But new receiving core, new offensive coordinator, offensive line that struggled, like, he hasn't been the problem for Arkansas. So I think in a game like this, Jefferson has to deliver. And I think anytime I think about, like, Jefferson needs to deliver in the clutch. Like, I think that's one of the reasons that gives me some optimism that this game will be closer maybe than the spread, is just KJ Jefferson is capable of keeping Arkansas in this game, and they're going to need him to have a chance to win on Saturday.
All right. How about this matchup, Stephen? Mississippi State on the road at South Carolina. I mean, I hate to keep saying the same thing, but, you know, I'll echo your sentiments here with some of these others. But just looking at the schedule, this is essentially a must win for both of these teams if they want to overachieve. I mean, if you drop this game for either one, you're not exceeding. You may meet expectation, but you're not exceeding. Zach Arnett, it's funny, Stephen. I mean, he just lost his first game as an SEC coach. Fans want his ass fired already. I mean, we're crazy down here. South Carolina, losing record, but that's more of a factor of who they've played than anything. This is not a losing football team, but a lot on the line. They cannot afford to lose this matchup. What's your initial thoughts on Mississippi State at South Carolina?
I think a hint of desperation, to your point. Like, knowing the way that the schedule sets up for both teams, Shane Beamer and Zach Arnett probably aren't looking at it like we are. Like, they're not pencilled in W's and L's in the preseason. Like, coaching staffs think they can win them all. So, but I think from my perspective, when I start looking at end of season, like, projections, if you're South Carolina and you're Mississippi State. If you want to go to a bowl game, like, these are the toss-ups you have to have. Mississippi State gets Alabama after this. South Carolina goes to Tennessee. So, you know, I think in some respects here, like, the winner of this game, not only is that desperation trying to get on track, like, you have a chance to sort of reset the season a little bit harder for Mississippi State. But if you're South Carolina, you know, Tennessee looked pretty vulnerable last week against Florida. So I think there's a sense of, like, early season desperation, must win for both teams. But also, it's a really good quarterback duel, too. I think if I'm Will Rogers, like, I'm motivated to show last week was just another blip on the radar, get back on track. If you're Spencer Rattler, I mean, he's red hot right now, and you're just looking at what Jaden Daniels did to Mississippi State secondary. Like, let Spencer Rattler throw it 45 times on Saturday night, because that's probably their – or Saturday, that's probably their best path to a victory.
Well, let me try to spin it in a positive light, because I don't think there's much positivity in Starkville right now, Stephen. But I think you can make the case Mississippi State's not going to play a better team than LSU. So, I mean, maybe they just face their toughest competition. And South Carolina's coming off that Georgia game. That's a physical toll for anybody. Maybe they're a little beaten up, a little battered. There's so much different than LSU. So, I mean, yes, to your point, Spencer Rattler can make you pay through the air, but I don't think South Carolina's defense can stop the run near as well as LSU. If Mississippi State can get that going, can they make us, a really competitive ball game, do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would be really surprised if this game ends up like Mississippi State LSU. I would be really surprised if it's one-sided. I think this will be a lot closer just in terms of where these teams are, in terms of team strength, strength and weaknesses. Like, I think you can pass the ball. Like, too, if you're Mississippi State, if you can protect Will Rogers, there's going to be some plays to be made on South Carolina's defense. So I think the kind of interesting angle for me in all this is Mississippi State. When you look at their two deep, like, 18 of the 22 starters, I think, are seniors. And – like, we talk about desperation, and you look at kind of the transition and from Zach Arnett and some of the offensive things here, like, there's a lot of experience on this roster. So I think even though the loss last week in the fashion that it was, yeah, it was bad. LSU is going to be one of the better teams they've played, but there's a lot of seniors on this roster. So I think for the optimism for me is that experience shines here for Mississippi State, and they're capable of getting back on track. They've had to navigate some scheme changes early on. Plenty of season to go. And if you're going to get back on track, it starts this Saturday.
And one final thought I have on this one, Stephen. Again, South Carolina's got a losing record. But the way they played on the road in Athens, if I'm a Gamecock, I'm sitting here saying, again, same deal. We're not going to face a better team than that, a more hostile. Well, I mean, they may, Tennessee, just because Tennessee hates them so bad. But Tennessee is not the caliber of Georgia at this point in time. If you could play as well as that against Georgia, I'm not sitting here saying they're just going to win out. But, hell, I mean, they could play with anybody on the rest of the schedule, don't you think?
Absolutely. To use a word... maybe we invented it earlier. I don't know. Toss-up-y? Is that such a word? We're inventing words here on that SEC podcast. But no, I mean, I look at their schedule and say, you know, they played Georgia and North Carolina, both ranked in the top 25. I think Georgia is the best team in college football in a year where it's probably a little bit more wide open maybe than we thought. They have to play Texas A&M, Missouri, Tennessee. I mean, you wouldn't pencil any of those in as guaranteed losses. And they get the last four opponents at home, including Clemson and Kentucky. So, I mean, to me, I don't think they'll win out. But if that same type of effort is there that we saw on Saturday and Spencer Rattler keeps playing at the level that he is and South Carolina gets a little healthier in spots, they find the right mix on the offensive line and they continue to develop. I mean, I think this team can maybe get, you know, I think in the preseason it was 6-6, 7-5. Like, I think they can easily get there. Maybe you start dreaming, hey, maybe 8-4 is suddenly within reach too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Final SEC matchup, Stephen, of the weekend. Kentucky at Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt, man, let one slip away that they really couldn't afford. Maybe they'll be in desperation mode, but at the same time, you beat Kentucky last year. There's going to be revenge on their mind. I would imagine this stadium's going to be quite blue because the drive from Lexington is pretty easy. And, of course, they took their best player, Ray Davis, who looks like he may be Kentucky's best player now. So thoughts on this matchup?
I think the first thing is to go back to a term that we used a few minutes ago, and that's desperation. And I think if I'm Vanderbilt, you start looking at the schedule, and I know coaches are different than us, but you have to be looking at the schedule going, if we're going to get to a bowl game, we got to get this one. Like the schedule is just really challenging. It's a game that Vanderbilt won last year. You get Kentucky at your place, not too many guaranteed W's on the schedule the rest of the way. So I think for Vanderbilt, a little bit of desperation. Maybe it's not, the coaching staff wouldn't publicly admit it, but I think if you gave them some truth serum, they probably would admit that behind the scenes. Yeah. I think for Kentucky, revenge. Like, you lost last year to Vanderbilt, a chance to rebound. And also in the big picture for Kentucky, this is our first chance to really get a good glimpse of Kentucky, because they've played Ball State, Eastern Kentucky, and they've played Akron. There's a lot that you like about Kentucky so far. The defense, like the way Ray Davis is playing, how good is the offensive line? Sort of feel like Devin Leary is getting more comfortable with each snap there at Kentucky. So I think there's reasons to like what Kentucky is doing, but we don't know how far along they are until they play an SEC opponent. And that's what interests me on Saturday, is I just want to see where Kentucky is, and maybe all of the early season struggles and iffy performances are just this team cycling and getting ready for SEC play, or maybe there are some bigger concerns here than we thought coming into the year.
Yeah, and playing so many cupcakes, Steven, that's not necessarily going to prepare you for what's to come. Now, Vanderbilt, maybe they can't challenge you, but and it's kind of silly to compare these two, but like Tennessee going on the road to Florida last week, again, that's not quite the same as playing at Vanderbilt Stadium or anything, but you know, that exposed Tennessee, and with all the miscues, and I mean, Kentucky, they feel like they're right there. There's a penalty here, there's a drop here, there's a bad snap here, and it kind of shutters an entire drive. And they're still winning. They're winning big too. Does that give you confidence in Kentucky can realize that potential, or are you a little nervous that we're over a quarter into the season, we're still wondering what Kentucky is?
Probably a little bit of both. Like, I know that's a bad answer, but you know, when I've watched Kentucky's first three games, you know, I see a lot of reason for optimism. And I go back to watching Devin Leary at NC State when he was healthy, and just to see how effective he was at NC State, how good he was. You know, Kentucky in a East race where it is wide open after Georgia, and we're trying to figure out like who could be that team. Like we talked about how much we like Spencer Rattler and Brady Cook. Devin Leary could get hot too. I mean, the Kentucky receiving core, the trio of receivers is, you know, it's up there in terms of just national SEC ranking. Offensive line for me, I think, is still the biggest concern. I think you have to like what you're getting out of Ray Davis. The big plays out of the offense, they've been there. I think you'd like to see maybe a little bit more down-to-down consistency. And I rarely worry about a Stoops led defense there at Kentucky. So, I think a bit of a mixed bag so far, but maybe the best way to look at this is it's the same thing with Georgia. Like, each week you're sort of kind of you're moving up the stairs and into SEC play, and you get a chance against Vanderbilt, the worst team in the SEC, to take a step forward. Then you get Florida. Like, your challenges are increasing, and maybe Kentucky's just ramping the intensity and the focus level that they need to win an SEC play. So this will tell us a lot, though, about where this team is.
Mm-hmm. And then we got a couple interesting non-conference matchups, Stephen. Memphis at Missouri, showdown of undefeateds here. Missouri riding high in St. Louis. But this Memphis team, they got to be careful. Can't overlook them, can they?
Absolutely. So I think the first thing is we just talked about how you know, we need to give Brady Cook and Missouri some credit. Like, all that could go out the window if they lose on Saturday in St. Louis to Memphis. Yeah, Memphis is only a touchdown underdog here. This is a dangerous spot for a Missouri team coming off the emotional high victory over K-State on Saturday. So I definitely think there is some caution if you're Missouri. If you're looking kind of for a scouting report on Memphis, I think the player to know here is Seth Hennigan, the quarterback from Memphis. He's one of the best in the American Athletic Conference. They brought in Blake Watson, a transfer at running back from Old Dominion this offseason. He's been getting better as the season goes on. So I think if you're Missouri, like the quarterback and the skill talent for Memphis worry you. Defensively, they've been good so far this year, but they've played Bethune-Cookman, Arkansas State, and they've played Navy. So we don't really know how good this defense is in the season. In the preseason, probably considered, in the upper half of the American Athletic Conference. It's not a great conference for defenses, though, so it's really hard to just know where they rank nationally, kind of compared to who Missouri has played so far this year.
Yeah. And how about this one, Stephen? UTSA at Tennessee. I know UTSA just lost to Army, but I believe their star quarterback, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think he played in that matchup. And this is one a lot of people had circled as a, potential spoiler in the preseason. And I don't know, Stephen. I mean, again, we were kind of talking up Tennessee earlier, but if the same miscues happen, at some point we got to say maybe this team's not that good. This should be a tune-up game going into SEC play, but I'm not convinced that it will. Thoughts on this matchup?
I want to see angry, motivated, locked-in Tennessee on Saturday. After what happened in Florida, Tennessee should come out with a little bit of urgency and also with a little bit of aggression, like to kind of put their foot down and say, that was last week. That's not the team we are. We're going to get back on track, especially with South Carolina coming up in 2 weeks. So on a UTSA scouting report, you're absolutely right. Like Frank Harris is their starting quarterback. He did not play against Army. They also have some other major injuries on the offensive line and at linebacker. So you're not getting UTSA at full strength. They do have some players that could give Tennessee some trouble. The backup quarterback is Eddie Lee Marburger. And he had a good game against Army. He threw for 239 yards and 3 touchdowns. He's on the all-name team, by the way. he's capable of hurting teams downfield. They've got some good talent at receiver and running back. But how does their offensive line hold up with some injuries? How does their defense hold up being banged up too? Army was able to throw the ball downfield on them. And when Army is hitting some passes downfield, there ought to be some opportunities here for Tennessee. So I think maybe if you're a Tennessee fan, the best way to look at this is it's not the UTSA team that I think some people thought could give them trouble in the preseason. And if it's close on Saturday, that would be a little worrisome for me if I'm Tennessee.
So rate it from a scale of 1 to 10, Stephen. 1, no concern at all. 10 being highly concerned. What's the 1 out of 10 rating that this is a 4-quarter game, UTSA at Tennessee?
Probably like a 5. I think UTSA still has enough in the program to make this a close game. I think it may be one of those situations where Tennessee sort of is always ahead, but maybe they just put it away in the fourth quarter. That rating changes if Frank Harris for UTSA plays. That rating would go up because if he's healthy, the type of quarterback that can give Tennessee's defense a lot of trouble moving around in the pocket with some of the runs that he can do and also the ability to hit downfield too.
Mm-hmm. All right. How about UAB at Georgia, Stephen? The Fighting Trent Dilfers, I believe. Can you give us a scouting report on them?
Yeah, that's right. It is Trent Dilfer. The Trent Dilfer-led UAB Blazers started off the season with a great win. Ever since then, it's been all downhill. They got blown out last week. So things are not trending in the right direction for UAB. If you're looking like this, the strength of this team the last couple years has been running the ball in defense. But that was under the last coaching staff with Bill Clark and Bryant Vincent. That's no more. That they are very quarterback-focused team. Jacob Zeno, their starter, off to a good start this season. They don't run the ball as well as they have. They don't play defense as well as they were either. So on paper, I don't think Georgia will have to sweat too much. And probably there's probably an opportunity here for Kirby and the coordinators to play a lot of guys and to keep some of the guys who are banged up off the field and healing for SEC play.
Yeah, leave it to Georgia. We'll get back into conference play, nationally televised, CBS, and then back to this trash, and then back to CBS next week. Yeah. But we got to hide them this week.
I mean, hey, great scheduling to get this game before you go play Auburn next week.
All right, how about Charlotte at Florida? What can you tell us about Charlotte?
Speaking of interesting coaches, if you don't know about Charlotte's coach, Biff Poggi, he was a hedge fund manager who is a successful high school coach. He coached in an off-field role at Michigan and is now the head coach at Charlotte. If that isn't interesting enough, he wears shorts and a cutoff shirt in games. So he's the main event here because Charlotte is 1-2 through the first 3 weeks of the season. Despite his interesting demeanor and ways, Charlotte is not very good this season. And he was also very upset with how they lost to Georgia State last week and promised some changes. So there's a lot of unknown here for Charlotte. It's the perfect rebound opponent for Florida after beating Tennessee. Like, if this game is close, it shouldn't be. That would be worrisome for Florida.
Yeah. And then we're asking you about Texas and Oklahoma because they're SEC to us, Stephen. Texas playing at Baylor. From what I gather, though, Baylor is pretty awful this year.
Yeah, they are struggling under Dave Aranda, the former LSU defensive coordinator. I think, you know, if you're an SEC fan and you looked at that box score against Wyoming last week and you probably wondered, like, what's going on? Like, did Texas struggle? They kind of did. Like, Wyoming just plays a very frustrating style. Like, they possess the ball for 10 minutes in the third quarter. They run the ball. They play good defense. So a little bit of a post Alabama hangover against Wyoming. I think we'll see a much more focused Texas team. You hit it, though. Baylor is struggling. Their starting quarterback is out. Their defense is not what it was 2 years ago when they won the Big 12 title. So, you know, this is a, I think maybe the takeaway from this is a spot where Texas may have slipped up in the last couple of years. Like, if this is a different Texas team, and I think we think it is, they should be able to go on the road and take care of business. And, you know, it shouldn't be, they shouldn't need a fourth quarter comeback to beat Baylor.
Mm-hmm. And how about Oklahoma, Cincinnati, Stephen, where I realize that Oklahoma's not played an impressive schedule either, but my God, they're just jumping on these teams. Or they're, I mean, it's like they got 30 points at the end of the first quarter, it seems like. So they're high flying. Will they be tested at all against Cincinnati?
I think you hit on something there that I think is like really important. Like, a lot of these games, when you're playing opponents that you're heavily favored in, dominance. And that's what Oklahoma has done for the most part. Like, the game against SMU was close, but SMU is one of the better group of five teams in the country, I guess ACC starting next year too. So I think this will give us a little bit of a better idea about one area on Oklahoma's team. You know, Dylan Gabriel has been red hot. You know, he torched Tulsa last week. They're starting to get some different playmakers involved at receiver, which was one of my questions coming into the year. But when you've played Tulsa and you've played Arkansas State, it's probably not the best kind of gauge to see where your offensive line is. And that's one of the areas that Oklahoma, from a progression standpoint, I want to see this year. Cincinnati can test them because this Cincinnati front is one of the better ones in the Big 12. So if they go out and dominate that front on Saturday, that is a very good sign for Oklahoma. So that's what I want to see in terms of just team strength. Cincinnati, Emory Jones, old SEC friend, starting at Cincinnati. They beat Pittsburgh 2 weeks ago, lost to Miami of Ohio last Saturday. So they've been up and down. I think we know the strengths of Emory Jones. So if Oklahoma can kind of keep him in the pocket, force him to be a pocket passer, the Sooners should keep rolling on Saturday.
Mm. All right, Stephen, any other closing thoughts on this weekend in the SEC before we let you go?
I'm just excited for the games this weekend, man. The whole like nation, like six or seven top 25 matchups. So, I mean, it's like the perfect Saturday if you're a college football fan to just find the seat on the couch at 11 a.m. Central and not leave until, I guess, the Hawaii game finishes at like 2 or 3 in the a.m. in the morning.
I can't wait for the rest of the country to start racking up these losses. And maybe it just won't be the SEC anymore, but thank you enough.
maybe that is something, actually, now that you bring it up, is like nationally, like, right. You know, where does like the SEC, you know, like, you know, playoff and all that stand? Like, I think this Saturday is actually kind of a good kind of like segue into the playoff discussion, because the SEC has been racking up losses in non-conference play, and like your best hope to get two teams is Alabama or LSU or maybe somebody else getting hot, knocking off Georgia in the SEC championship game. Well, this week some of the other contenders could start taking losses, like Florida State goes to Clemson, you've got Ohio State, Notre Dame playing, you've got Penn State playing Iowa, you've got some good games in the Pac-12. So I think if you're an SEC fan looking for a reason to pay attention to these games, this is like you're going to start seeing the losses outside the SEC start to add up. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would say. Like, that may give us a better idea of kind of 1-2 losses, undefeated conference champions, kind of where this is all headed this year.
Mm. Well, Stephen, I can't thank you enough for joining the show. As always, before you go, tell the audience, where can they find all your work?
Absolutely. You can follow me on Twitter at Aflon Steven. You can also follow me on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Steven L CFB. You can follow my YouTube page, All CFB 365. And we also do the Cover 2 podcast by Aflon Sports. It'll be up on Wednesday morning. That's the Cover 2 podcast previewing the weekend to come all across college football.
Yeah, and I've been enjoying you and Braden. You do your SEC picks late in the week. I always tune in for those as well. So I appreciate all the content you're putting out there. I can't recommend it enough to all the audience. Thank you again for joining the show, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. Just will say thanks again, Stephen, for joining the show. I hope all y'all get as much out of those conversations as I do. But hey, just want to say thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Cousin Shane will be back on the next episode. We'll preview all these upcoming games, just like Stephen and I, but it's always a much different conversation when it's just Shane and I. So be on the lookout for that on Wednesday. But that's going to do it for this episode of the show. I appreciate each and every one of you for hanging out. We'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.